Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, January 24th, 2020. Egyptians remember their anniversary of the Tahrir Revolution.
Of course, counter-revolution is dominant, is leading the area these days. If you want to have a real revolution, you need to make a lot of changes: education, political culture, the media, the root of political power.
And Sudanese rebel groups strike a deal on security arrangements in Sudan. We'll bring details on these stories right here. A Sudanese government delegation and armed rebel groups engaged in peace talks in Juba sign a framework agreement. The deal covers security arrangements, power sharing, and land issues. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The framework deal signed today between rebel groups under the umbrella group Sudan Revolutionary Front and transitional government officials moves the parties a step closer to a final peace agreement. Adi Idris, chairman of Sudan Revolutionary Front, describes today's signing as a milestone in Sudanese negotiations.
There is so many details, including issue of lands was resolved, issue of legislation for the two areas that within the Sudan, there's two areas because they have their own uniqueness. Therefore, the agreement gave them the chance to make their laws and to regulate their local issues. I think this agreement is so significant and put us in a very advanced stage for making the final and comprehensive peace.
Idris says security arrangements in the agreement are aimed at creating a unified national army.
The security arrangement talks about how to reintegrate all these arms group to have one single and unified arm.
Military leader Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, a member of the Sudanese Sovereign Council, signed on behalf of the transitional government, is speaking in Arabic. Dagalo, also known as Hemeti, says the agreement will usher in a new era in Sudan.
By signing this agreement shows our political will as the government of Sudan to peace, and this peace will change the lives of all the people of Sudan better than ever before, and it will end marginalization and violence in Sudan.
The Nuba Mountains-based SPLM North faction led by Abdelaziz Al-Hilu declined to sign the agreement despite participating in the talks. President Salva Kiir, who witnessed the signing ceremony, called on Al-Hilu's SPLM North faction to resolve their differences and be part of the positive change in Sudan.
The groups that are still holding out should be convinced to join you, those who have signed today, so that all of you come to one agreement, and when you go in without any doubt that there will be somebody left behind to disturb people tomorrow.
By signing today's agreement, the Sudanese people have decided to silence the guns and embarked on developing their country, according to Kiir.
I'm happy, it is my honor, that all of you have accepted our call and you came to Juba to participate in the discussion of the fate of our countries. This year, 2020, has been earmarked as the year for silencing the guns all over the world. I believe it will start with you in Sudan and us in South Sudan, because if we continue fighting among ourselves, nobody will then turn to us, will be left to decide our fate by killing ourselves to the end.
Ahmed Al-Umda signed on behalf of the SPLM North faction led by Malik Agar, while Tutke Ogadluak, President Kiir's security advisor and chief mediator at the talks, signed on behalf of the South Sudan government. The parties are expected to continue negotiations on a final peace deal in Juba over the next few weeks. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The outgoing U.S. ambassador to Uganda, Deborah Malak, has called on Uganda's security agencies to ensure freedom of expression and association as the country gears up for a tense election period. But a Ugandan government spokesman says whoever is aggrieved by the actions of the security agencies should go to court. Halima Athumani reports for VOA from Kampala.
The outgoing ambassador has called on security forces to ensure that the Ugandan people have the ability to exercise their constitutional rights of freedom of assembly and expression. Deborah Malak says in order for Uganda to maintain its place as a stable democracy in Africa, Uganda needs a free and fair 2021 election. An election, she says, that allows dissenting opinions to be heard and where voters know they can trust that the votes they cast will be counted fairly. Malak said police are using the country's Public Order Management Act selectively to clamp down and arrest members of the opposition. The opposition members are trying to hold public consultation meetings and delegates' conferences ahead of the campaign period, which begins in August, leading to the 2021 general elections.
We hope that there will be some effort exerted to work with the security forces to help the police understand the proper interpretation and implementation of the Public Order Management Act. We know that that is a work in progress, and it will continue to get used as a very blunt weapon against real, imagined, or perceived opponents of the status quo.
Government spokesperson Ofwono Opondo, speaking to VOA, dismissed Malak's statement as useless, saying it's only the courts that can interpret the law.
I think in the application of the law and enforcement of the rule of land order, the police in Uganda is right to act firmly within their jurisdiction. But assuming that there was misinterpretation or misapplication, what does POMA itself say? You seek redress in the courts of law or administrative law, go and challenge the arbitrariness of the police officer or police officers in courts of law.
The Public Order Management Act states that organizers of a meeting shall notify the police at least 3 days before the meeting takes place. Charity Ahimbisiwe, the national coordinator of the Citizens Coalition for Electoral Democracy in Uganda, says security forces ought to respect a 2016 Supreme Court ruling. The court stated that there was no level playing ground, especially for presidential candidates, in the run-up to the 2016 elections.
Because the police had been high-handed on opposition and not the NRM, which we are seeing playing out again right now, the Supreme Court judges did rule at the time that to make the field leveled, the police should be seen to protect all citizens equally. We have not seen that happening. We are seeing what we saw in 2016. So how do we then believe that anything can change?
President Yoweri Museveni, who has led Uganda since 1986, is expected to run again in the February 2021 election. His potential opponents include Robert Kyagulanyi, the legislator and musician better known as Bobi Wine. Wine has been arrested several times, most recently on January 6th when he tried to hold a public meeting at a church in Kampala. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Still in Uganda, Uganda has declared an outbreak of yellow fever in two districts of Moyo in West Nile region and Bulisa in Western region. Uganda's Ministry of Health says 3 people have died of yellow fever. The outbreak is traced to Uganda's neighbors, South Sudan.
A 37-year-old farmer trading in milk between Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, last visited Bulisa Hospital last October with a headache, vomiting and abdominal pain. He died on 4th November and blood tests studied at the Uganda Virus Research Institute confirmed he had yellow fever. Uganda's Ministry of Health says 7 contacts with the deceased were followed. His wife tested positive but was treated and survived. The 6 other contacts tested negative. Early this month, 2 other yellow fever cases were found at Moyo General Hospital in Moyo. Both patients died. Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
In Moyo district, there are 2 confirmed cases. Both are males, aged 18 and 21 years. The two cases were dealing in cutting and trading timber between Uganda and South Sudan. On the 2nd January 2020, the two cases traveled from South Sudan to Moyo. Upon arrival, they got ill, and on the 3rd January 2020, they were admitted at Lugobo Health Center 3 in Moyo District.
Acheng says teams have been sent to the two districts to investigate the spread of the disease and identify contacts, the confirmed patients for isolation and monitoring.
The district health teams of Moyo and Bulisa have initiated investigations. In addition, the Ministry of Health, the World Health Organization, and the Centers for Disease Control have dispatched rapid response teams to Moyo and Bulisa districts to support investigations, active case search, and community mobilization and sensitization.
She says government plans to procure vaccines for vaccination of those between 6 months to 45 years in the two districts.
The ministry has requested for yellow fever vaccines from the International Coordination Group that manages global stockpiles of yellow fever and meningitis vaccines. We anticipate that within the next 2 weeks, vaccines will be available and vaccination will commence in Moyo and Bulisa districts.
Acheng says Uganda will discuss with partners a possibility of including the yellow fever among the vaccines offered free during routine immunizations.
The Ministry of Health has also applied to Gavi and WHO for inclusion of the yellow fever vaccination into the routine immunization schedule. Having faced 4 outbreaks, Uganda now qualifies to introduce yellow fever vaccine as a long-term measure to prevent yellow fever outbreaks.
The vaccine currently costs about $23 in Uganda, and many people have shunned it. Dr. Jonas Woldemariam is the World Health Organization country representative. He says routine vaccination is the only protection against yellow fever and promises WHO support for including it in Uganda's routine immunizations.
We are working very fast to do that. I think our target would be anywhere between 3 to 6 months as we can. We can control yellow fever if we put it in the routine system, and that the more we use it in a routine system and that it is provided free for the vulnerable population, and that would make sure that people have the valid and authentic card. So people will get more used to it and they would realize that it's easy to get it, to be vaccinated.
18 countries have incorporated yellow fever vaccine among their routine immunization schedules, 5 of them in Africa. The Minister of Health has appealed to all travelers in and out of the country to ensure they are vaccinated against yellow fever as a way of minimizing the risk of spread of yellow fever through international travel. Ugandans are advised to sleep under mosquito net and report any suspected cases to the nearest health facility. Yellow fever is transmitted through mosquito bites. Symptoms include high fever, headache, body aches, fatigue, vomiting, blood in urine or stool, and or yellow discoloration of skin and or eyes. Those infected usually die within 7 to 10 days if not treated. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Egyptians remember anniversary of their revolution. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your definition of the life well lived?
When you accomplish your set goals. Take for example, when you say, I must finish university, even if you don't work, as long as you're finished, there is no problem. Even if I die today after finish.
When someone is living a godly way, focused on achieving his or her own goals, and trying to be morally upright.
Though it's not everybody that actually have a dream, but there are some this set of people that have a dream and then working towards to achieve that dream.
A life well lived is one where one is able to fulfill his dreams, his aspirations, his goals, all that he wants before he dies.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In Egypt, security forces say they are ready to face alleged threats and calls for protest this weekend to mark the anniversary of Egypt's 2011 uprising. President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi calls the Arab Spring uprising a conspiracy, and there has been a campaign in the media to portray it as a time of chaos. Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, spoke with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Hashenawi about the counter-revolution trend in Egypt.
All revolutions in history have been portrayed as conspiracy. So this is a very common description by any ruling class. The Egyptian revolution has been tarnished by Islamist involvement and the deep state in Egypt. Both sides have to be blamed. Islamists got foreign support, and that also fed the conspiracy discourse in the Egyptian media. And I don't see that the regime is going to change this discourse because he lives on the internal and regional support because he is fighting revolution and all those forces that want chaos and a repeat of what is happening in Libya and Syria. Revolution in Egypt, I believe, is not going to be repeated again in the same way. After 2013, we have never seen any 1 million revolution again. I don't think this is going to, you will have that tomorrow or the next year or the year after. This is not possible these days.
Do you consider that counter-revolution?
Of course, counter-revolution is dominant. It's leading the area these days. If you want to have a real revolution, you need to make a lot of changes. Education, political culture, the media, the root of political power. And this has not happened since pharaonic times.
Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi attended on Thursday a ceremony for the 68th anniversary of National Police Day as security forces prepare to confront alleged threats and calls for protests this weekend in light of the anniversary of Egypt's 2011 uprising. Can you explain the focus on National Police Day and not the anniversary of Egyptian Revolution?
Look at Egyptian media in the last 7 years, you would find that they are equating revolution with chaos, with civil war, the example of Syria, Libya, Iraq, while police is equated with law and order, maintaining national security, fighting foreign conspiracies. I think opposition is exaggerating its power, and the government is exaggerating the threat, so that in the end, after the 25th of January, the government looks like they have been able to stand up against this threat. Egyptians tried two revolutions before, 2011-2013. They are exhausted. They just don't see that revolution is a tool for change and that reform would be better. They see the area around them that all the states are falling down. So the mood for revolution in Egypt does not exist.
Egypt's Minister of Interior said that police were ready to confront attempts by Muslim Brotherhood members to harm the country's national security during the 9th anniversary of revolution on Saturday, calling on the Egyptian people not to respond to calls for incitement, rumors, and fake news. What's your take on that?
Revolution has been linked, discredited by this linkage to the Muslim Brotherhood and the presence in foreign countries, especially Qatar and Turkey. And this promoted and helped the government and its media promote this idea about foreign conspiracy. The aim, of course, of this call is to delink the opposition, secular opposition that exists in Egypt. And we have a lot of critique of the government, but we don't want them to link up with the Muslim Brotherhood. And that discourages secular opposition from joining the call initiated by the Islamists. And we have to remember that you have many internal social forces in Egypt who fear the Islamists. So anything that comes from the Islamists, they look at it with skepticism. You have women in Egypt, 50%. You have cops, 10%. They are afraid of the Islamists. Add to that the deep state. Add to that there are many regional and international forces do not want trouble in Egypt. For example, Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Israel, the United States, the EU after experiencing refugees from Syria, the trouble from Libya. We don't want, another chaos in the Middle East, especially in Egypt, one of the biggest countries in the area.
That was Saeed Sadiq at the American University in Cairo speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. The World Health Organization says the number of reported cases and deaths from the new coronavirus is probably an underestimation, and the true figures is likely much higher. Latest reports put the number of confirmed cases at 830, including 26 deaths. Lisa Schrein reports for VOA from the WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The decision not to declare the coronavirus outbreak a global health threat was not unanimous. Despite 2 days of intense discussions, the expert committee remains deeply divided about the decision. Chair of the Emergency Committee, Didier Hussain, says those in favor of declaring the event a public health emergency noted the increasing number of cases and the severity of the disease as causes for concern.
But several others say that it is too early because of limited number of cases abroad, and also considering the efforts which are presently made by China, Chinese authorities, in order to try to contain the disease.
Stringent measures to try to control the disease from spreading are increasing across China's Hubei province. Chinese authorities have temporarily suspended air and train travel in and out of the city of Wuhan, Hubei's capital and the epicenter of the disease. It also has closed the city's bus and subway system. Similar measures are being implemented in a growing number of other cities across the province. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the outbreak poses a very high risk in China, regionally and globally. He urges countries to remain vigilant and take precautionary measures to protect their people from becoming infected.
For the moment, WHO does not recommend any broader restrictions on travel or trade. We recommend exit screening at airports as part of a comprehensive set of containment measures. All countries should have in place measures to detect cases of coronavirus, including at health facilities.
Tedros says there is human-to-human transmission of the virus in China, but for now it appears limited to family groups and health workers caring for infected patients. He says at this time there is no evidence of human-to-human transmission outside China, but he warns that does not mean it will not happen. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has warned that an outbreak of locusts in the Horn of Africa may soon spread to other countries. Mohammed Yusuf has details for VOA from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has warned that an outbreak of locusts in the Horn of Africa may soon spread to other countries. In a joint press conference Friday, the FAO and the East African Regional Body, IGAD, said locusts feeding on crops could leave millions of people without food. Bukar Tijani is the deputy head of Africa for the FAO. He gave an update on the locust migration in the region.
The infested areas, definitely Kenya, Ethiopia, Somalia, but also Eritrea. Then countries at risk in Eastern Africa, South Sudan, and also Uganda. Sudan and Egypt are also infested. So we are looking at the whole region of locusts because of these conditions, which are very suitable for locust breeding.
Unusual weather patterns, including heavy rain since October, and general climate conditions are blamed for the spread of the desert locust swarms. Theophilus Mwenda describes how the pest ruined his farm in eastern Kenya. At around 5 in the evening, yesterday locusts invaded on my farm, ate my maize, he says. In the morning, they started eating maize and other food crops on the farm. Then they started eating animal feeds. It ate everything in my farm. I don't know what to do. The United Nations Food and Agricultural Agency warns the food situation will worsen if nothing is done to stop the swarms from spreading. Tijani says people who lost their crops and food supply will need financial support.
For the food insecurity, FAO is working very closely with the World Food Programme. And in fact, they know exactly what we're doing, how we're doing, and we are making assessments so that we can look at families that have been affected, that have lost livelihoods, to support them before the next raining or harvest season.
Authorities say they are dealing with locust numbers in their billions. Stephen Joker of Desert Locust Control Organization says they are deploying aircrafts to control the swarms.
The respective governments have acquired pesticides. I want to assure the people of Ethiopia and Kenya, where we are spraying now, that the pesticides we are using are safe for non-targets, and there is not fear about poisoning. We do, of course, tell people where we are sprayed, you take some time before you go in there, and the sprayer people, the people on the ground doing ground spraying, should have protective clothing.
The FAO says the locust invasions may continue until June. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Friday, when I leave you with the song Sudan by Lomerica Jazz Band.
Sudan, oh, 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 Sudan, bled kepiri fi Afrika, Sudan number one fi Afrika, Mwakani nita Sudani ketire, Gabaye ta Sudani say ketire, Nina pulu apol ekwon, Nina pulu nasiwa ide. Africa, Sudani number one in the Africa, Mwakani ita Sudani ketiwe, Gabaye ita Sudani say ketiwe, Ninakulu akwa yewa, Ninakulu nasiwa ide.
That's Lomerica with the song Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a safe weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
salama, nalima sawa na sala pele na sudani, nalima.